Welcome to the Midday for a Tuesday. I'm Norman Gilliland, broadcasting from Wausau today, live from Wausau, from the Center for Civic Engagement here at the UW Marathon County. And we have a couple of, actually more than a couple of performing units, you might say, for this hour of the Midday. We'll begin with Ann Applegate, whom I have never heard play, and we had not met until today, but I hear great things. Welcome to the Midday.
Thank you.
You're a teacher, not just at the college level, but the high school level also?
That's correct. I actually have some of my younger students in the audience today. I teach preschool age children all the way up through high school at the Wausau Conservatory, and then I come over here and I teach the teach the university students as well.
You cover all the bases then.
I cover all the bases. I wear many hats in this town.
I gather there are special challenges to teaching each of these various age groups?
Well, there are, and that's what keeps me on my toes, and I feel like it keeps me fresh because that gives me a chance to keep shifting gears and trying to make sure I know who I'm trying to relate to and relate to them on the proper, on the proper level.
Now, as a former piano student myself at a very early age, I have to ask, when you get to some of these preschoolers, early elementary school students, can you tell right away that they're no good?
Absolutely not!
My teachers waited like 10 years to tell me.
They all are capable of achieving great things, and that's my job, is to try and pull out each of those wonderful things out of each and every one of them.
We had some years ago in Madison on the square, we had an instrument petting zoo.
Yes.
At WPR, and I was fascinated. I thought it was going to be kind of a dull experience, but I was fascinated to see how young children picking up an instrument, say a violin for the first time, had this innate musicality. Some of them did and some of them, had
some of them have to
less.
Be trained a little more, but some of them, it is very natural. That's true. There are some that have just a very instinctive relationship with the instrument and with music, but all of them have capabilities that can be achieved if they have the proper nurturing.
Really?
That is my philosophy.
And by golly, you're going to stick to it.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
However many lessons it takes. And then what about when you get to the adolescent level? Are there more distractions for the students?
Not so much the adolescents as the high schoolers, and then the distractions are just geometric in proportion. Whether it's other things that they're involved in school, other activities, drama, just some of them are very academically gifted. And as a consequence, they're involved in lots of other things, whether it's science Olympiad or different math contests. The string of things that they're involved in just seems to go on and on and on, and practice time becomes more limited, and then as a consequence, it's more challenging.
Well, you mentioned the sciences, and there does seem to be a strong correlation between science and music and the aptitude in those.
There are some definite correlations, and I have three students who are out taking AP tests in calc right now. the whole math and science part of the brain gets used in music as well as the creative right part of the brain.
And so music education in the schools can be a way to really deepen and broaden the education in all those other subjects.
That is very, very true, that music opens up certain pathways, certain neuronal pathways that help the students in other subjects. That's something that I hope that people always keep in mind.
Well, let's hear some Scarlatti. Now, Scarlatti was a fascinating composer in that he was quite the virtuoso, Domenico Scarlatti. And back in his day in the 18th century, they used to have keyboard competitions between one composer or performer and another. There's a story about Scarlatti and a harpsichordist named Thomas Rosengrave, and Rosengrave wrote the story. And so we have reason to believe it because he heard Scarlatti play first, and then he said, I just went home, and if I had had the presence of mind, I would have cut off all my fingers so I could never even be tempted to play the instrument again because I know I could never be as good as Scarlatti. Do you see that kind of virtuosity when you play these wonderful miniature sonatas of his?
Absolutely, particularly in the second one. The second one is the more up-tempo of the two that I'm playing. The first one is a little more lyrical and languid as a consequence. But there are definite flashes of brilliance in the C major that I'll be playing shortly.
Okay, so we'll play those two as a set,
we'll
right?
We'll play two as a set. We'll play first one in F minor, which is a little unusual in and of itself because of his over 500 sonatas that he wrote. There really aren't that many that are in F minor. C major is a much more standard key. And, you know, as a consequence, it is more up-tempo and has a definite, almost a hunting call sense to the second one. Thank you.
Anne Applegate with two sonatas, two of about 550 total, by Domenico Scarlatti, all of them those charming little miniatures. What is it that makes that second one, Anne, sound like it's got that hunting quality? Is it the intervals, or what is it?
It is definitely the intervals in it, because it's a lot of open intervals and not a lot of thirds that are filled in, and it reminds me of hunting horns.
Oh yeah, me too. Yeah, and it's the kind of thing that was very popular in the 18th century. There were a lot of hunting horn concertos and post horns and that kind of thing. Back now from the Center for Civic Engagement. That's where we're broadcasting from for the midday today in Wausau. And I'm talking to pianist Anne Applegate. We've heard two sonatas by Scarlatti. And I'm thinking almost as different as you could get, at least in classical music, in piano literature, would be Claude Debussy. Scarlatti, I noticed no pedal at all.
No pedal, one single little bit.
Whereas Debussy, you hardly ever let up.
That's correct.
You know, he's very expressive. Of course, a very different kind of keyboard that Debussy was working with, too. One thing that the French composers, all the way back to the 18th century, were particularly good at is giving neat titles to the pieces. You know,
they do.
Yeah, it wasn't just Sonata in F or something like that. It was...
Or Prelude.
Yeah, it was Dead Leaves, or, you know, in the case of Erik Satie, who was a contemporary of Debussy's, Verity, Variably Flabby Preludes for a Dog. And desiccated embryos. Satie maybe went a little too far with it.
Yes.
But Debussy has some really charming titles, really evocative titles.
They are very evocative, and the moods are very evocative. And one thing that I find fascinating about the preludes is the fact that he doesn't put the title in until the end of the piece. It's not
That
is there at the beginning. It's just the number in the cycle at the beginning. You have to kind of think about it and meditate about it until you get to the end, and then, oh, he says, by the way, this was about, you know, for example, Dead Leaves.
Dead Leaves. Yeah, which sounds better in French. How does it sound in French?
I'll do my very best. Feuille morte?
Yeah, feuille morte. There's so many French titles that just, I think they were probably given because they sound good.
They do sound, they sound wonderful for those who can speak the language well.
My personal favorite is by Ravel, another slightly younger Debussy contemporary, the Pavane pour un enfant de fante, which means the
Pavane
for
a
dead
princess.
It just doesn't work nearly as well in English. But of course, the music by any other name is as sweet. So what about Dead Leaves? Is this one of the preludes?
This is definitely one of the preludes, and it kind of begs the question, why am I playing a piece about, in essence, fall? Because quite literally in this piece, you can hear at the end, you can hear some of the last leaves falling off the trees. It's a beautiful spring day. So my whole take on this is that let's be glad it's spring and be glad we're not heading into the dead season the way this whole prelude makes it sound.
It's good salesmanship.
It is. I'm doing my best here with the salesmanship. But this piece in particular, it has such a sense of melancholy to it and such a sense of almost desolation, as in, okay, fall is gone, the color is gone, the leaves are off the trees, and now look what you have to come, you know, look what you have to look forward to. And especially here with Wisconsin winters, that's really pretty, it's been pretty intense lately.
It has been long and intense.
So it's nice that we're on the other end of it for a change.
So for a few minutes, we're going to take you to the bad place so you can appreciate the good that much more.
The good that we have today, you bet.
Musically, it's great stuff, though, and it is very atmospheric. So
definitely atmospheric.
Thank you. Well, okay, and having depressed us, not really, but in a kind of a hypothetical sense, what else do you have to offer?
Well, this is what the West Wind saw, and it is described as tumultuous. It is described as very Listian, as in taking a lot of cues from Franz Liszt as far as certain technical effects.
The kind of the consummate piano virtuoso.
Definitely,
showman.
Definitely, and this has its moments of brilliance as well. It is this is not a gentle breeze that blows all the time. The wind ebbs and flows very much like the wind itself does. And actually, there's some writing that this may be based on a Hans Christian Andersen character.
That can be depressing too if you've read your Hans Christian Andersen.
But it's one of the Zephyrs. So a Zephyr really truly is West Wind in Danish.
Oh, is it?
Yes, and it actually just the wind blows gently and then the wind just totally kicks up. And, compositionally, if I could, I would talk about a couple things with respect to this because there are some very interesting things that Debussy does with tonality in terms of use of the whole tone scale rather than the typical major minor that we're
so
accustomed to.
Play us a quick whole tone, if you will. Yeah, it's a different flavor altogether.
It's a completely and totally different flavor, and the melody comes out of that, the harmonies come out of that, the scalar work comes out of that. Either the pattern of three whites and three blacks, or two blacks and four whites. Either one. We get both versions of the whole tone scale in this particular piece.
Well, we'll go just past 12:30 for our quiz question with this one, What the West Wind Saw.
Okay.
Thank you. What the west wind saw, and a powerful wind it was, too. And I've noticed, you know, in all of the pieces you played so far, Anne, there is crossing of hands. How common is that as a piano phenomenon?
Probably not very common. Right. I just happen to be picking some of the stranger ones.
Apparently
I do. I mean, especially the Scarlatti, oddly enough, was almost more crossed than it was uncrossed.
Yeah, right.
But each of these, now that I think about it, each of these has the element of hand crossing in it as one of the technical challenges.
When we come back and do it for television, you're on.
Oh, there we go.
And now back to Anne Applegate and one more. Any crossed hands in the Chopin? We'll wait and see.
Possibly.
We'll keep it in suspense.
Possibly.
But he didn't invent the nocturne, but he made it something transcendent.
He made it something very, very unique. And I have to say that this particular nocturne is very much atypical of many of the Chopin nocturnes. This one has a little more fireworks in it. It's described by some as a miniature ballade, if you will, that
it actually evokes a story.
Yes, it evokes more of the techniques of the ballades rather than just, you know, it's not all florid. There's more to it than that. I'll share an anecdote. A student of mine was looking at the score the other day, and she said, well, you know, the first two pages just look like a regular Chopin nocturne. And then you turn the page, and it's black. It's black with notes, absolutely.
Well, we'll get to hear what that sounds like. This is the Nocturne in C minor, Opus 48, number 1 by Chopin. Thank you. with the Nocturne in C minor by Chopin. And now we have changed things considerably. We've got, 14 of them, Tim?
15
members of the UW-Marathon County Vocal Jazz Ensemble. We'll do at least three numbers, maybe four, time permitting.
Great.
And they'll be, what, You're Nobody Till Somebody Loves You?
That's the first one, yeah. Kind of a medium swing in the tradition of maybe 1930s big band era.
What fun. And then Words. Just
yeah.
Words.
Yeah, a very contemporary tune. Comes from a Swedish composer that sings with a group called The Real Group, a vocal jazz group out of Sweden. Really a fun kind of unique contemporary jazz song.
And then What a Wonderful World, that's familiar to us, I suppose.
Of course, made famous by Louis Armstrong.
And if we don't have time, we'll put it on our website right after the show, and that is Voice Dance.
Yeah, okay. It's actually a wedding recessional done a cappella.
Nice. How nice. Okay, so here we go with the UW Marathon County Vocal Jazz Ensemble led by Tim Buchholz. UW Marathon County Vocal Jazz Ensemble. Tim Buchholz is their fearless leader. Oh boy, what a rich, close harmonies you accomplished there.
It's a lot of fun working on it. It's a great challenge with all the dissonance and yeah, the tight harmonies you hear in there, but it's a lot of fun. They do a great job.
And vocal range from the low, low to the high, high.
Oh yeah, low basses down to, what do we have, some low Bs in that, Mason? From our low bass up to high Bs, three octaves up in the soprano.
Yes, way down there. And how many total in the ensemble?
So 15 singers, all freshmen and sophomore college students here at UW-Marathon County, as well as our pianist, Mike Fisher.
Mike Fisher, great job. And so you recruit every semester, or how porous is this organization?
Sure. So we go and we do a tour every spring to some of the local high schools in the area, and we do exchange concerts with them. Mm-hmm. And some of these students were in high school audiences when we went and sang for them. And yeah, we're growing the program here.
Does everybody pretty much enjoy this work? Okay. Ask an honest question, you'll get an honest answer. Well, it's been great having you on the midday today, and we'll look forward to hearing more from the UW-Marathon County Vocal Jazz Ensemble.
It's our pleasure. We'll look forward to the next time.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. And thanks, one and all, for participating in this afternoon's broadcast. Thanks to our tireless engineer, Brittany True, and to the crew here at the Center for Civic Engagement in Wausau. Thanks also to Rachel Stickert and Peter Bryant. And now you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.